Radcasters Podcasting School is open for enrolments until November 27th. So if you've ever listened to this podcast and thought to yourself, man, I would so love to give podcasting a go, you know, I've got something to say, but you're kind of scared that you're not really sure as to how it's all going to come out. You need some help kind of figuring out who you're talking to, why you're talking, what you're talking about. You're feeling a bit overwhelmed with all the tech stuff. Well, Radcasters Podcasting School is the place for you. If you want to learn more, go to radcasters.com and you'll find everything you need to know there. Enrolments are open until the 27th of November and you get immediate access to all the content and can work your way through it at your own pace. Next round won't be until February and the price will be rising $300. So if you're thinking about podcasting, now is the time. Radcasters.com. Today's conversation is with Melita Hardenberg from Breaking Bad Habits. Melita and I met because she started doing my Radcasters course. And she just dove right in. Like, nothing stops this chick. She just was like, you know what, I want to start a podcast. And she was the first Radcaster to go live in iTunes before the course had even finished. So she's a real go-getter, a real doer. And today our conversation is really about breaking bad habits and, you know, getting outside your comfort zone. I think you're really going to dig this one. And so I'm very pleased to present to you Melita Hardenberg. Welcome to Carlosophy's Stories Behind Success. I'm Carly Nimmo. It's so easy to fall into comparisonitis as an entrepreneur, and it can be paralyzing. In my own journey, I've come to understand that regardless of your level of success, fame, or fortune, we're all suffering from the same stories of fear, struggle, and failure. So let's talk about it.
Where to start? Look, I'll probably start. I mean, I've started my own business a couple of years ago, and it actually happened when I went on maternity leave. I had been in corporate roles for near on a decade. For the last 3 years, I'd actually done my role remotely. So I had a Melbourne-based role, and I was doing that from Perth. And when I had my daughter, I really felt like I needed more meaning. I mean, I loved my job, but I needed more meaning, and more importantly, I needed more flexibility. And I've always been passionate about health and fitness. So I thought, okay, well, I've had 10 years in leadership development and cultural change and behavioral change, and I'll start my business. I think after about the first year, I started looking for a job. I was like, okay, this is really hard. And I just felt like, for all the time and investment that I put in, I was just not getting where I wanted to go. And I think my key lesson in all of that, like, it got to a point where just something clicked, something changed. And for me, that was around really understanding my voice, my positioning. Like, I struggled with how authentic do you be? Like, you're kind of positioning yourself as the guru, but I'm like the anti-guru. Like, I'm only in this because I'm teaching what I most need to learn myself, right?
Yeah.
So how vulnerable can you actually be? So it took me probably a year and a half to actually find my voice and to let myself be really authentic and open myself up and really understand the people that I was serving. And with that came a change of brand and really understanding that it's actually a completely different offering to what I thought I was offering. So I started out with my business being around get fit and focused, and it morphed quite quickly into breaking bad habits, because that's essentially what it was about.
Yeah.
And it was funny, I was reflecting on my, how I got to where I was, and I was, because at the point I was being diagnosed with an autoimmune condition, I was stacking on the weight because I had an underactive thyroid, I was suffering from, in and out of, really low moods, sort of bordering on postnatal depression, and, trying to be a mum and run a business, as you do.
Always fun.
Yeah, it's always fun, as you do. And it got me thinking about this, this was at that time where I was, thinking, is this business going to work, and changing brands, and made me think back to a decade previously where I'd actually quit smoking. And I went through a process when I was quitting smoking. Like, I did lots of research on behavioral science. You know, I'm big, you know, I love books. I'm a bit of a nerd, you know, embrace my best nerd, and got all the books out, did all the behavioral science research. And, you know, I actually found it somewhat easy to quit smoking. Like, that was a habit that I'd had for over a decade, you know. But in order for me to manage my condition around autoimmune disease and the low moods, I needed to radically alter my diet. For someone who's really health conscious, I thought that would be a breeze. That was like the hardest thing in the world. Like, I just couldn't give up things that I loved.
Yeah.
You know, I had like a little peanut butter and cookie habit that I just couldn't kick. And it struck me as I'm going through this transition from get fit and focus to breaking bad habits that, shit, like, the small habits are harder to kick than the big habits. And when I started to think about it, I think, well, when you quit something like smoking, how much effort do you put into it? Like, there, you do research, there's doctors and support groups and websites and processes, and you put thought into when you're at your most vulnerable and strategies in place, and, you know, your whole family cheer around you, you know, to keep you on track. When was the last time you saw a helpline for a cookie habit? But, yeah. You know, I could have used one. Yeah. And not only that, people don't rally you on to, you know, break those bad habits. In fact, I found it's quite the opposite, where people, you know, are in your face, you know, on a Friday night with a glass of wine and, you know, what's one won't hurt.
Yeah. I found it's similar with smoking though too, you know, like, I think the non-smokers are rallying around you going, quit smoking. And the smokers are going, oh my God, another one bites the dust. We got to hang on to this one.
Yeah.
Just one.
Yeah, come on. Won't hurt. You know, and you wouldn't say to a crack addict, just have another hit, you know, it's fine, you know. But yet we really, so that really made me think, you know, for such a smart, well-educated woman, why was I really struggling with this? And simultaneously, the work that I was doing in the corporate world, I'd been branching into health and well-being. You invest all this time talking to, you know, high-functioning professionals and executives about the importance of health and well-being, and they already know the stuff. Like, people know how to be fit and people know how to be healthy. You have that saying, you know, knowledge is power. Well, no, knowledge is potential, action is power. But why are people not, why for such a well-educated, smart group of people do people struggle to be fit and healthy and kick the bad habits that move them away from their health goals? So that's what led me into that real shift in my business, you know. And as I said, I'm like the anti-guru, you know. I'm just well educated around this stuff because it's, you know, it's what I most need to learn.
Yeah.
So that's where that kind of journey kind of helped me to work through, okay, well, actually my business is helping smart, well-educated women and organizations focus on breaking the habits that are getting them in the way of success, you know, particularly health success. And whether that's food, fitness, sleep, procrastination, whatever the habit, like, we've all got them. Yeah, so that's kind of where I am today with the business.
It's so interesting because, you know, I have a group of about four of my girlfriends, and most of us have had babies in the last few years. In fact, all of us, in the last 2 years. And we've all just since struggled with our bodies, you know, struggled with losing the baby weight, struggled with looking in the mirror and not seeing that fit pre-baby body. Instead, you know, there's a bit of a gunt going on and, you know, some scarring and all that kind of jazz. And so it's difficult to look in the mirror. Like, I remember when I was pregnant and I was looking in the mirror, I was like, oh my God, this is just such a miracle. Look at me. Like, this is the first time I've actually ever felt really happy with my body because I'm growing this. Like, this is incredible. It's like, wow. And then have the baby and, you know, and the guts kind of still there. The baby's gone, but the gut's there. And we've been, you know, trying different things to egg each other on. So it's been like, you know, we created this little Facebook group for the four or five of us. And, you know, we tried, let's set some health and fitness goals. So, you know, we want to drop 5Ks by Christmas or whatever. And then, like, you know, and then one of us will be like, uh-oh, you know, went through the McDonald's drive-through and, you know, that kind of thing.
Yep, that little habit.
Yeah.
Because,
yep. You know, sometimes like,
away, so yeah. I'm gonna push it.
Exactly.
That's my dinner.
Yeah. Or, you know, like I go to the, I'm really, really good. And then I do it in like chunks. So I'll be like dedicated to the cause. I'll do it for like 10 days or something, really great. And then something will happen to tip me off, you know?
Yep.
And it will be, for example, I go to my hairdresser's. She's up in Narang, which is like an hour and a half's drive away. So I drive up, get my hair done. By the time I'm finished, it's like 2 o'clock, 2:30 in the afternoon. I'm starving. And then I chuck Mabel in the car and she falls asleep in the first 5 minutes. So I can't stop anywhere. So literally, my choice is a drive-through. Or actually just plan my lunch, which for some reason doesn't seem to occur to me the morning. I pack Mabel's lunch, but I don't pack my own, you know. And so I'm just constantly making bad choices. And the psychology of it is like the mind fuck, really, because I know how to eat healthy. I know what before I had Mabel, I was fit and healthy. And then extreme tiredness, sleep deprivation, you know, just needing a lift every now and then.
Yep.
Breastfeeding, just sucking the life out of me.
Yes.
You know, all that kind of jazz. And I start making bad decisions and bad decisions and bad decisions and then beating myself up for those bad decisions.
And what I've uncovered is that there's almost this there's two elements to that. One is there's this and I call it the, you know, habit sliding scale. Like first we start off with, particularly if it's food related, you might start off with a biological or a biochemical craving. And that's because your brain, you know, I won't get into the technical side, but, you know, you start off, you know, just craving something and then you start to indulge in that craving. And if you do so, then it becomes a psychological habit. I mean, 40% of what we do every day is done by habit. It's just easier. Like when you've got 100 things happening, especially for mums with young kids and interrupted sleep, it's just easier to go with what you know than trying something new. So you tend to fall back on old habits. And if you continuously indulge in those habits and they start to impact on the quality of your life, that's when it starts to fall into that kind of addiction zone where you start to think, I'm not sure if this is just a bad habit or a craving or I'm actually physically addicted to sugar. You know, I'm actually not sure which one it is. You know, and particularly when you're run down, that's when we're at our most vulnerable. You know, habits themselves, like it's an incredible thing how habits happen. And I don't think we actually give ourselves enough credit for the habits that we find ourselves in because it's just easier. You know, when you performed a series of steps or behaviors a certain number of times, your brain says, okay, I need to stop thinking about what I'm doing. Like I need to conserve some energy. So I'm going to package up in a nice little neat box that sequence of steps. And if that's hitting the ice cream jar after dinner or, you know, the drive through on the way to get somewhere, I'm going to package that up into a nice neat little box and I'm going to store that in a different part of the memory, in a different part of the brain. And so when you're triggered by something, and as you said, like it might be an emotion, you know, you might have an event that happens that because you've been good for so long, but something that is then triggered, your brain says, ah, we're back at the trigger. I'm going to take out that nice little box and I'm going to roll out that action, and that's when you go on autopilot. And it's like when you drive to work and you're not quite sure how you got there.
Yeah.
It just happens on autopilot. And then you go, shit.
Yeah.
That's right. I wasn't going to do that this time. But you're already halfway through the ice cream, you know, jar or the cookie tin.
I've had the last, Palazzo biscuit from Aldi and I'm like, what? How did I just eat nine of those biscuits?
You know, and it's funny, like the most common habits that I've worked with, you know, it's almost like when I talk through what the most common habits are, people go, oh my God, that's like I've got four out of those six, you know, and it's simple things. It's like just that need for something sweet after dinner or the 3 o'clock sugar hit, you know, that little pick me up, you know, the lack of the, you can't quite get that exercise habit. So it's on autopilot. So you get up no matter rain, hail or shine, too much wine of an evening where, well, you know, one little glass turns into four little bottles, you know, quite easily. You know, it's those types of habits that are pretty easy. And once you know what your habit is, then you can kind of work out, okay, what's triggering it? You know, and some of those, the most common triggers is an emotional state, like you're tired, you're run down, you know, the need to have a bit of self-care or self-indulgence, you know, like you've worked bloody hard, life's shit, you know, when you've got a toddler that screams at you all day, you need something as a self-care. So it's understanding what the triggers are, and like you, what you would do when you're quitting smoking, like know when you're most vulnerable. If you're going to a pub, you know, it's Friday night, you're having a few bevvies and you're with your ex-smoking buddy, you know, or, you know, yeah, now that you're an ex-smoker and you're with your, you know that that's going to be a challenging time. So you kind of put in place strategies in order of what you'll do in that scenario, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So it's applying those same concepts to, you know, those just those shitty habits that are really hard to kick. And there's just, I mean, it's just exploding. I mean, the more people I speak to, the more common I'm realizing these are. That's the exciting part, is that when you can talk about, when you can bring that level of vulnerability around, well, you know what, I'm actually struggling with this, and that this is why I'm creating it. I've got some knowledge, I don't have all the answers, you know, and I'm about to have my second baby. I'm 4 weeks away from number two at the time that we're chatting, and like my first pregnancy, I was like, this is a miracle. This is amazing. This time I just can't even look in the mirror anymore, you know. And I think, oh, my God, where's my body gone? Yeah. I'm looking forward to this child being out and being able to get back on track and, you know, all that sort of, all that jazz.
Yeah. So do you feel like, you know, this work with bad habits, is it, you know, is there any tie to you as a kid in there? I'm just really interested because for me, I didn't realize until, you know, looking back and where I can join all the puzzle pieces together, but you know, I was a kid sitting with a double tape deck recording my voice like all the time. So it's, you know, and I looked into that heavily when I was searching for my purpose and all that kind of jazz, and it just didn't occur to me until very recently. Oh yeah, okay, I've done this all my life, you know.
Yeah.
And I guess my two key values in life have always been communication and connection. And what I'm doing now is like the intersection of those two things. So is there like a theme for you that's carried on throughout and has kind of led you here?
Yeah, I think so. And it's probably less to do with the breaking habits as a content and more the context of I've done the same thing, you know, like what I want to be when I grow up, you know. And then when you reflect on that and work out what you really value in life, which I actually did whilst I was pregnant with my first, you know, there was, as you do, you get really in tune with your body and, you know, you've got to find meaning and purpose. And, and for me, my three values, the ones that just kept coming back up, was this absolute love of learning. Like since I was a kid, you know, I was, you know, once a nerd, always a nerd, loved the process of learning. And it didn't necessarily matter what the content was. I just loved learning. And so for me to be able to help educate others, that's me at my greatest.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I love doing. And I've done that as a kid quite consistently. I've always been drawn to that in my professional life. So this is kind of a natural extension of that. And everything that I'm doing in my business is around helping connect people and concepts and really apply, you know, it's that action is power, not knowledge. So that's one aspect. And then my second value was, you know, health and well-being. You know, even as a smoker, it never seemed to fit me. Like I've always been a sport, you know, always been into sport, health, fitness. I remember I was, I think I was about 18 when I was diagnosed with lots of different food allergies, and when I finally went on this quite strict elimination diet, like I felt amazing, like I came alive. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget that feeling of, you know, I realized just how bad I'd been living for a number of years. You only really appreciate what you have when it's been taken away. It's like sleep, you know, after you've had kids. You really only appreciate it when it's been ripped away from you. Or recently, like we flew on an aeroplane with a toddler, and I've never appreciated the idea of flying peacefully without a child until I flew with a toddler.
Yes. I think there's a couple of things there. One, I love that you say action is, what was it?
Action is power. Yeah. Not knowledge. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I have this thing where, like, even in sitting in therapy, you know, I can logically understand a concept, but unless I, it's not until I really live that concept that I have, like, I can embody it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I really like that, the whole toddler thing, the whole kid baby thing, the whole sleep thing. Everybody tells you when you're pregnant, you know, you'll never sleep. I used to get so angry about that. I was like, fuck off. Like, I will sleep if I want to sleep, you know.
Yeah.
And sure, I didn't sleep.
I've done all nighters before.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I get up to the toilet like four times a night. I'm used to getting up, you know. And also the, you know, what they people bring up what you're going to lose through having a kid. And I used to get really angry about it. And then, you know, and then I lived it. And I realized, like, the people aren't saying it to say, you know, I kind of thought this, okay, this is what I thought. You know how when you're a smoker and we were talking about it just before. So you quit smoking and your smoking friends are kind of a little bit put out because they're losing you from their smoking cabin.
Yeah. You know? You're their enabler.
Yeah.
So you make it okay.
Exactly. And it's threatening to have someone, you know, move on. And I felt like motherhood was a bit like that. Like there was, I felt like motherhood was like the pack of ex-smokers. They're sitting there, they're begging me to join the ranks of, you know, being a mother. And then I join and they go, ha, 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 ha.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. But now I also see that there's a bit of ha, 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 but there's a lot of, you know, the reasons that we do it. You know, and the magic that motherhood can bring to your life. It's not all, you know, your life is over. There's definitely an element of your life has changed, but, you know, whether it's over or not is up to you.
Yeah. I remember reading this amazing article and it was in a triathlon magazine. It was this woman who's normally a, you know, highly competitive triathlete. And she wrote this article every year around January around her reflection on her race year. But this particular article, she'd had her baby in that year and so she hadn't raced. And her story was around how she was thinking when she was pregnant that she was going to experience, you know, serious FOMO, like serious fear of missing out on all the things that she loved to do, racing and catching up with friends. And she said, you know, I suffer serious FOMO now. Like my child is nearly 12 months and I suffer serious FOMO, but it's not the, you know, it's not the things I thought I'd miss. It's the fear of missing the first words and the little things that they do every day and the new things that come online. And I just thought, yeah, spot on, sister. Yeah, right on. Like that's exactly right. There is so much joy. You just have, you know, a lot of ups and downs to get the joys. You got to go down to go up and up to go down.
Yeah, yeah. It's just putting life in a bit of a pressure cooker. So everything is a bit more heightened for sure. Mm. For sure.
I remember when I found out, and this is, you know, wildly off topic, but when I found out I was pregnant with my second, I went through 6 months of tears when I first found out because I thought, I just don't know if I can do this lack of sleep again. I don't know if I can do it. I'm not recovered.
Yeah.
I'm not recovered. And you can't say to anyone, I'm actually not excited about being pregnant. Like we struggled, you know, we had 18 months of trying to fall pregnant with our first and, you know, to the point where we were pre-IVF and daily hormone injections and we tried so hard and we finally fell pregnant. And then for this to happen, like so quickly and by accident and not trying, you know, and you just think, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this again? And to feel so isolated in that mind, you know, and in that thought that, you know, this is actually supposed to be a joyous thing, but I am freaking out, sister.
I know. It is hard because, you know, I fell pregnant accidentally. On purpose, but accidentally. and I think, like, I had always wanted to have kids, but it just wasn't really on my radar. I didn't really think it was possible. So I had emotionally moved on, although I had been collecting baby girl clothes for 7 years, even though I didn't, you know, I was quite verbal in saying that I didn't want kids. And so it was quite difficult for me because I felt kind of guilty. You know, I felt guilty that I have a whole bunch of amazing friends who would make incredible mothers around me who were really struggling to have a baby. And here I was accidentally pregnant and a little bit shit scared.
Yeah.
But also a bit excited and all that kind of jazz. But it's hard because you don't want to voice your disappointment for her fear of alienating the people who are really struggling to conceive. So it's kind of like that. The whole thing is a fucking minefield, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yes.
And as a mother, regardless of whether you're pregnant or not, you just cannot win.
No, that's right. And I remember thinking, you know what? Shit. You know, like my business is finally getting momentum and I'm not ready to take time out of it yet. I'm not ready, but I guess I have to be now.
Yeah. Well, that baby's ready.
Yeah, the baby's ready. Yeah.
And it'll be what it will be. And, and you know, I remember thinking, how am I going to do it all? And, you know, it is a struggle. It's a struggle. Yeah. It's a day-to-day. It's an hour-by-hour struggle. But the struggle is worth it. You know, I haven't actually read Liz Gilbert's book yet, the what is it? Big Magic, but I hear a lot of people talking about the shit sandwiches, you know, and eating the shit sandwiches. I've got to read it. And it is like that. Like motherhood is one big shit sandwich that is sometimes hard to digest, but also really worth eating the shit.
I mean, beautiful thing now is that I'm so fortunate that I have a business that can operate without me being present 24/7, you know. So, you know, I take some time out, but it can still function, you know. And I remember being so clear around that when I set it up that, you know, it had to be able to, you know, be location independent, online. It had to serve a purpose. I have to be wildly passionate about it. So it had to kind of fit all these criteria.
Yeah.
And I think now that it's kind of getting to a point where it is sustainable, where I think, well, actually, this might be a goer. You know, how wicked. You couldn't do that in a full time. You know, it's a bit more challenging to do that in a full time capacity.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Time to kick up your feet and relax. It's On the Couch.
Biggest fear?
Besides fear of missing out on my child's development, I do have a fear of failing, and I don't know. Biggest fear. It probably would be fear of failing. And sometimes I'm not sure if it's fear of failure or fear of success. You know, people, like, I've only just started to look at this. Like, sometimes I'm so scared of doing something and I'm not sure if it's because I'm scared of failing or because I'm scared of what will happen if I actually succeed. So I haven't quite worked out which side of the coin I'm on, or sometimes it's
both.
One side, sometimes it's the other. Yeah.
Realized in the last few days, actually, and I've recorded a couple of free flows on the beach this week just about that, the fear of success and how I've kind of been hiding a bit because I'm scared of that FOMO, but more like me, because I think because I had a big failure and I lost a lot in my last, my failed co-working space, lost a lot of money, lost, you know, hurt my ego, a whole bunch of other things. It took a lot from me. And so I've been really scared about fully committing to anything because I'm scared that it will take away more than it gives, you know. So, and I really highly value freedom. So for me, it's like I don't want to go into something and then miss out on Mabel growing up because I've been so, you know, focused on success that I've missed what really is important to me. And but then what I've realized this week is, I don't know if that's the truth. I don't know if me going after my dreams and actually, you know, becoming something bigger than what I am, or my business becoming something bigger than it is currently, and really propelling me to a level that I've dreamed of all my life, is that going to take away what's important to me? I don't know.
Yep.
So what about if I just did it? And if it got too much, I can always pull back. But if I never go there, I'll never know, you know.
Yeah. So I think, you sort of think, well, am I valuing stretching myself and doing what I love, or am I valuing comfort? Because it's much more comfortable to stay inside that comfort zone and, you know, just getting on by, And I remember, you know, one of my girlfriends said to me, Melina, happiness lives just outside your comfort zone. And I wanted to smack her in the face. But it's true, you know,
Yeah, and as someone who's constantly growing and stretching and learning and, you know, and for you particularly really valuing learning, then that involves stretching outside of your comfort zone because, what was it? Action is power. Knowledge is what? Yeah.
Potential.
Yeah. So you've got to. You've got to live that lesson.
Yes.
Which can be bloody scary.
Yes, it is.
Especially to be doing that on a public stage. And I think maybe that's where the fear of failure comes from is, you know, not extending yourself or extending yourself so far that, I don't know, you know.
And it's like that, you know, I've been doing a lot of thinking about the imposter syndrome recently. Like,
I just recorded a podcast on imposter syndrome this morning. Yes.
I mean, you're probably not better than I am, but you sort of think, who am I to be talking about this stuff? Like, when are they going to work out that I'm just me doing what I do? I'm no one special. Yeah, for sure.
And that was one of my big realizations this weekend, you know, speaking at this big event and being on sharing the stage with some really high profile people was that we're all the same. You know, and that was the reason I started this podcast. We may have our baggage or our, you know, our ship might be different shapes but and different sizes, but we're all, our needs on a deep emotional level are all the same, you know.
Yep.
We all need to be loved. We all want to be heard. We all want to be valued. Mm. And so our needs are all the same, but I think what differs is that they believe that they are maybe – you know, I think I'm stepping into that belief that I am an expert in my field.
Yeah.
And I've really struggled to swallow that, you know. It's just been chewing around in my mouth for a very long time and is kind of like a piece of extra that really needed to be in the bin an hour and a half ago.
That was the best analogy. I love that.
You know, and I'm still chewing it and it tastes like shit, but I'm still chewing it. I just need to either spit it out or swallow it, you know.
Yeah.
So what are you struggling with? Like, what do you struggle with at the moment?
For me, it's that balance between motherhood and career and that balance. Like, I love working. I love what I do. And I come in and out of struggling with that. Like, I want to be able to, you know, there's times I really would love to invest more time in the business, and then there's times that I really want to invest more time in, you know, I don't feel like I often get that balance right. Yeah, and I think that's, to me, is the struggle. From a business side, what I struggle with is staying on target, you know, because you know, I want to do everything. And for me, I'm the eternal optimist. Like, forget glass half full, like glass is overflowing. I always think I have this amazing capacity to get stuff done. And I have like a tenth of what, you know, I can actually do a tenth of what I think I can do in a day. Yeah, I find I need to have a team of people around me to help keep me focused. Otherwise, I just, you know, go off and, I suffer occasionally from shiny syndrome thing, like, oh, shiny new thing over here and shiny new thing over there. And before you know it, I've got 50 half-done, half-baked things done, whether it's at the house, which my poor husband will attest to that, and, you know, 50 half-done things in the business. So I struggle to maintain that laser-sharp focus that make you effective and efficient.
Yes. Yeah.
Particularly when sleep deprived.
Yes.
Yes.
And, you know, I kind of just, I just feel for my poor personal assistant because I just throw, last night I actually created a base camp project so that I can give her more, you know, because I just go, let's do this. And then the next day it's like, let's do this. And then there's no direction or anything for her. And she's just like, what am I supposed to be doing? You know, anyway, that's the joys of working with an overactive mind.
Yes.
So failure, what does it mean to you? And like, how does it show up?
That's a good question. That's a tough question to I always find that question really tough. You know, I want to say like the corny line of like failure is just not giving it your all, you know, when failure is not realizing your own potential or allowing yourself the opportunity to do that. And the more I'm getting into this space of, you know, running a business and being a business owner and realizing that that's what I need to do, that to me is, I see that more as failure, as not giving it a shot. Like, I've done some things lately that I thought I would never want to do because it puts you on a very public profile, you know, like starting a podcast.
Yeah.
I just recently done some filming with Channel 7 to go on a lifestyles program.
Wow.
Talking about habits. And I remember doing 4 years of drama in school and never once did I act. I always did like the behind the scenes thing because I'm a kind of behind the scenes kind of gal. So I think for me, failing is not trying and, you know, living comfortably in your comfort zone. And I think from a personal perspective, when I think about the word failure, like when I went through a bit of antenatal depression, you know, I was really quite upset, you know, not quite sure how to handle the idea of a second child. I think for me, understanding that failure for me is not listening to my inner voice, not giving myself enough credit and kind of, you know, pushing through because that's what you think everyone expects of you. You know, that's failure. And success is really understanding yourself and what you feel is right for you in the time. And if it's not working 7 days a week and it's being at home with your child, then that's success. But if you're trying to push through and just really not listening to your body and your mind and your souls when it's speaking to you, no, I think that's personal failure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I ask this question of all my guests and now hearing you say that, it really does, you know, we think it's external. Mm. We think it's other people thinking that we're shit or whatever,
yeah.
But it's really internal, isn't it? It's
yeah.
Like failing yourself.
It's a very personal journey. It is a wildly personal journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you think you've had like a hugely defining moment, like a sliding doors moment?
No, not really. No, I want to say something profound here, but no.
No, that's okay.
No,
I saw it on my list and I was like,
no.
I haven't asked that question for a while. I'm going to ask
it. No, I think, I don't know. Yeah, well, maybe. I mean, the set of circumstances that have led me to having the courage to go out on my own, like if all those things hadn't lined up, there's no way I would have ever, like I would have dreamed about it for another 20 years, but never have actually gone out and done that, you know. So for me, working remotely, being such a people person and wanting, you know, craving that connection and while also having maternity leave and having 12 months to out of the business, and on top of that, having a really supportive husband. And like, so I think if some of those things hadn't, if we hadn't been in that circumstance, like the only reason I was working remotely was because my husband was transferred to Perth from Melbourne. So if those things hadn't have happened, there's no way I'd be in the position that I am today. Yeah.
I think the sliding doors thing, I think often like it's more that you've actually just taken the chance and stepped through the door, you know, and you have. So
yeah, well said.
Yeah.
Yeah, right on, sister.
Ah, rocking. okay, so the last kind of – oh, actually, there's two. So and this isn't necessarily on a negative slant, but, like, what have been your biggest lessons?
Oh, good question. My biggest lessons is probably to back yourself and my – okay, I've probably got three. First one, back yourself and give yourself the credit that you would give someone else. And I'm slowly learning that. My second one, and again, this was a girlfriend of mine. She gave me this advice when I was actually struggling with Isabella's sleep. And I kept saying to her, it's not really that bad. You know, like there's mm-hmm. others that are worse off than me.
Mm-hmm.
I can deal with getting up 4 or 5 times a night. And she said to me, yeah, it's not that bad, but you know what? Shit could always be better. And in that moment, I realized, yeah, you're right. You know, why settle for things that are okay and I'm coping when I could call for help and things could be better. And in that instance, I called for a sleep specialist, which has led me to my third lesson, which is around get the right team behind you. So I know for me to be at my best, I know where my strengths are. I'm wildly intimate Like, I really know when I'm at my best. And for me, I need certain people and support around me to do that. Like, I've got a business coach that I use that helps keep me focused. I have a health coach that helps keep me both nourished, and she helps keep me in check listening to my own internal voice. So, it's okay to ask for help. You know, if you know when and how you're at your best, what's wrong with asking for help around that? You know, it's
absolutely.
Like,
I think a lot of people see that as a failure, you know, needing help as some kind of personal failing. But really, like, it's okay to struggle. You know, it's okay. You don't have to brush it off. If you're feeling it, it's real, you know. Yep. So I think like
even personal trainers have personal trainers.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if they have personal trainers, surely we can all have a bit of help.
Yeah, absolutely. A psychologist have a psychologist, you know. It's like, coaches have coaches. Yeah, for sure. Last one.
Yeah.
Last negative kind of slant. Recurring voice. So, you know, we all have this evil bitch that lives in our head and just tells us a whole load of bullshit about ourselves. What does your evil bitch say?
She always says, "You're a fucking idiot." you can't do that. What are you doing? Who are you? You know, it comes back to that kind of imposter syndrome. Like, I'm just this chick who struggles with a cookie habit, you know. You know, what do I know about running a business? You know, I've never done sales. You know, what do you know about being a mum? Like, you're going to ruin your child's life, you know. Yeah, so I think it's just that everything you do, that second guessing. So mine always says, "What are you doing? You know, like, you're an idiot." So you have to quieten that voice down.
Yeah.
Often.
I think I'm going to try and gauge her more, you know, like have a bit of dialogue with her.
Well, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
It's a great idea.
Let's give it a go. Yeah. So now moving into the more positive kind of stuff, this is a question that I've just started asking and I really love it. What does freedom mean to you? What does it look like?
Freedom to me is, that's an interesting question because I'm quite clear what it means in a work professional setting, but I'm probably less clear on what freedom means in a personal setting. But I guess freedom is, to me, really being able to live in a way that's really aligned to your values, you know. So if you, like, for me, I really value learning and I really value health and well-being and I really value family. And if I can do all of those three things on a daily basis, like, that's freedom for me,
totally.
Total freedom. You know, freedom in a business context for me is having total control of how and when and who I spend my time with. And I'm building my business based on those things. And I remember even getting when I was kind of interviewing business coaches and I went through a series of pretty old school business coaches around, you know, we talked about what my vision was for the business. And I don't want staff. I don't want a physical office. I don't want, I don't want the traditional bricks and mortar business. I want something that's fluid and flexible. And I struggled to find a business coach that would understand that. And they talked about, well, how do you scale up? And, you know, surely you'll want to employ staff. And no, that's not – I've led teams before. I have no interest in that. And I don't want offices. And I just want a laptop and a good holiday. And I can still do what I love and be with my family and still invest in my health and my own well-being. So, yeah, that's probably what freedom would mean.
Interesting because – often we need to figure out what we don't want in order to figure out what we do want, right? So, like, I like that you knew what you didn't want, and from that you figure out what you do want.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, like, the other thing that just came up for me was a story that was about, you know, I can't remember whose story it is, but some, I'm sure, I always do this, and then I get a listener contact me and go, "It's a blah blah," you know. So then I'm like, "Thank you for giving me answer." but it's this story about this guy, and he's, you know, he's just in a little fishing village, and he's there, and he just gets enough fish to feed his family, and then, you know, a guy comes along. Have you heard this one? Where, you
I've
know,
heard this only recently.
Yeah, where the guy comes along and he says, hey, do you know, like, if you caught a whole bunch of fish, you could come back. And, you know, basically gives him, like, he's like the business coach. He's telling him you need this and you need this and you need to go out and you need to catch a whole bunch of fish and then you need to come back and you need to work your ass off.
And then you get, and then you get a bigger boat.
Yeah,
and you get a big fish.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you make more money.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, and then he's like, and then the guy goes, and then what? And he says, well, then you can just sit back and relax and spend time with your family. He's like, but that's what I'm doing now.
That's what I'm doing. Then you can sit back and be retired and just have a little boat and go fishing and spend time with your family. Yeah. And that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Like so it's, you know, when you can really be clear around what success and freedom mean to you. And I think that was part of my journey is, and also being okay with my own definition of that. And it's okay for me to have a strategy and even a strategy at home with my husband around what freedom and success means for our family unit, because it's certainly not going to be the same for everyone.
Totally.
Mm.
And the last question, self-love and self-care, what do you do for you?
Oh, well, I'm a sucker for a good massage. look, I love, and I guess it goes to that learning, you know, self-love and self-care. It's those three values and they always come back. They play such a big role. So having time out for me to, you know, I just love, you know, a bit of time by myself at a cafe with a book. That's kind of like quite filling for me. It fills my cup, I guess you could say. And really prioritizing doing those things. It's taken me quite a while to learn that, you know, it's like the oxygen mask. I need to put my own mask on before I can help others. And I'm okay with that now. So I schedule my time out on weekends where it's just, you know, I have an hour by myself, or make sure I get my walk in every day, and I prioritize that. You know, my husband and I, we do talk about that, like what's I mean, he's a cyclist and a triathlete, so for him getting his bike ride in on a Saturday morning and then going for coffee with the boys is really important to him and his self-care. And for me, it's being able to just have a, you know, 2 hours to myself of an afternoon, you know, balancing that with spending time with family. So we work together on how we each get time for us to fill our own cups, time as a family, and you know, and time to do all the other commitments that we've got. Yeah,
cool. I like that. Because, you know, I just see so many around me anyway. So there's a lot of men who do what they want, but then the women are left not really doing what they want and not allowing themselves the time for that. So
it's,
I like
funny,
that.
Funny, I had a light bulb moment. Like, you know, he's always been very committed to his exercise. You know, he's, when I say triathlete, he does Ironman racing. So it's, you know, sometimes it's, you know, 25 hours a week on top of work of solitary exercise. So that's a lot. And I remember saying to him, don't you feel guilty when you're out for a 4 hour bike ride and I'm left at home with the child? Like, because when I go out, I'm thinking I need to get home. Like, I'm like racing around, even though it's my turn to just go for a stroll through, you know, the shops and sit at a cafe. I'm like sculling my coffee, racing around, trying to get home so he's not left alone for too long. And he said, no, why would I feel guilty? We've organized it. And in that moment, just like that, I went, oh, well, I don't need to feel guilty.
Yeah.
I still do at times, but less so now after I realise, well, he doesn't feel guilty and rightly so. So I shouldn't either.
For sure.
The plug. Instead of filling the podcast with self-promotion, we're being totally transparent. Here's the plug.
You can find me at the website breakingbadhabits.today. What I offer is online programs for women who are well informed about health. I often say it's like the Michelle Bridges for people who don't need exercise videos and diet plans, like who kind of already know how to get in shape and how to be fit and healthy, but just need that, whether it be the kick up the ass or the help breaking those habits. So I run online programs to help women do that. So they can certainly jump on and find out. I have a podcast.
Of course.
So you can jump into iTunes. And that's called Breaking Bad Habits. And with every podcast that I do, as I'm a big passionate advocate of learning, every podcast comes with a free cheat sheet so you can download and actually apply everything that we talk about. So if you're out running or doing the shopping or whatever it is while you're listening, you can get home and apply that information. So that's me.
The takeaway: exercises or tips for positive change, sprinkled with salt and vinegar, wrapped in newspaper and handed over the counter from our special guest to you.
There's probably two things. One, I have a saying that motivation is what gets you started, but habits are what keeps you going. You know, so if you can build healthy habits, whether that's around work, fitness, health, sleep, whatever it is, family, procrastination, if you can build more healthy habits. And knowledge is potential, action is power. So sometimes it's about knowing less and doing more.
Yeah, cool. Thanks heaps. This has been really fun. I've loved talking about, the habits, because it is like it's the things that are holding us back are really just, well, it's a belief that has been a belief for so long that it becomes kind of a habit. You know, it's just the place that we go to. And I love that there are things that we can do to, you know, change that.
It's so good. I mean, there's a whole body of science around it. It's pretty incredible. And it's the thing that I love is that it's not willpower. Like, we don't suffer from bad willpower because that doesn't exist. It's just habits. And they're much easier to kick than you think.
For sure. Thanks heaps.
Thanks, Carly.
Thanks for tuning in to the Carlosophies podcast with me, Carly Nimmo. Let's continue the conversation at carlynimmo.com. If you were a big fan of the podcast, I'd be stoked if you left a review. And if you want to hear more radness just like this, be sure to subscribe and spread the word. In the meantime, be real, be rad. Peace out.